So that you know, today is a very heavy topic, of course, discussing pornography, but I want you to know the background for this. It was last September at the USCCB meeting. They had a committee meeting on laity, marriage, family life, and youth, and they were very, very concerned about the issue of pornography, how it is destroying families, and what can the church do about it. So out of that meeting, it was there that NACFLAM committed that they would devote one day to this topic. And we are very, very pleased because we have the best of the best here today with us to discuss the issue of pornography. However, it will be a heavy morning. There's no doubt about it. And what we're going to do is we have three presentations. Each speaker will have 45 minutes. And at the end of the 45 minutes, between the first and second, we will have a quick 10-minute break to just stand up, move a little bit. If you need to go get a drink, use the restroom, and come right back in. If you don't need to leave the room, that's fine. But we want to give you a chance to at least stand up, move around, come back in, and then again, on the hour, at 10 o'clock, the next presentation will start. Go another 45 minutes, quick break, and at 11 o'clock, on the hour, the third presentation will start till 11:45, and then we'll have the 15 minutes of Q&A, okay? So it's a tight morning, but I want to just let you know that's how it's going to work. If at any time you need to move around, of course, do what you need to do. But those will be the two short breaks in this morning's session. Do not forget to sign up for Eucharistic Adoration. The sign-up sheet is actually on the door of the St. Louis West Room. Again, the need for prayer for all of us is crucial. We cannot underestimate the value of that. Please take advantage of that. And then finally, Region 10. Tonight you all have dinners with your regions. Region 10 needs a count. They need a count of how many people will be attending that dinner. So if you're in Region 10, you're attending the dinner tonight with your section, please sign up at the registration desk for Region 10. The dinner will be here at the hotel on the top floor. All right, those are our announcements for this morning. It is my pleasure to introduce to you right now Patrick Truman, our first presenter of this morning. Patrick Truman is the President and Chief Executive Officer of Morality in Media, a national not-for-profit organization established in 1962 to combat pornography and uphold decency standards in the media. He is also director of the War on Illegal Pornography, a coalition effort of more than 120 national and state groups seeking to restart federal obscenity prosecutions. Formerly, he served as chief of the Child Exploitation and Obscenity Section, Criminal Division, U.S. Department of Justice, Washington, D.C., from 1988 to 1993. While there, he supervised the prosecution of child sex crimes, child pornography, and obscenity. He managed an office of 20 prosecutors and supported staff and worked with the nation's 93 United States attorneys to initiate and coordinate federal prosecutions. During his 36 years as a lawyer, he's litigated cases at all levels of the federal system, including in the United States Supreme Court. He's been an advisor to many municipalities on First Amendment law and has helped draft ordinances to end or curb the impact of sexually oriented businesses such as pornography shops, strip clubs, and related establishments. And in 2010, he founded the website Pornography Harms, dedicated to providing the most accurate, peer-reviewed research on the harm from pornography. The site has a companion YouTube channel and Facebook page as well. His biography is so long, I want to just give him the time he needs. Please help me welcome Mr. Patrick Truman.
Thank you very much. That introduction was already plenty long. I was when I was with the Department of Justice one night, I had to go up and give a talk in Baltimore to a church group, and when I got up there, the lady had written down, handwriting, an introduction. And it was such a long one, I said to her, just make it as brief as possible. I had young kids, I said I had to get back, do homework. So she took that literally, and when it was time to have me get up and speak, she said, our guest tonight is from the U.S. Department of Justice. His name is Patrick Truman. No man in America is more familiar with pornography than Mr. Truman. So I tend to prefer the longer introductions. Well, you're to be commended for getting up and Sticking with the conference, you've been here a couple of days, heard a lot of speakers. So I thought to enliven you this morning, I'd be permitted to tell at least one Catholic joke just to get things going. And it's a story about John the 23rd. Now remember, I said this was a joke. John the 23rd, he died, he went up to the pearly gates, and there's St. Peter. St. Peter says, "May I help you?" And John the 23rd looked puzzled, and he said, "Well, I'm here, let me in." "Who are you?" "Who am I?" "I'm John the 23rd. And the Holy Spirit looks down at the list. He says, "I'm sorry, your name is not here." "What?" And he's indignant. And St. Peter said, "Don't get excited. Cases like this, we get the Holy Spirit, and he'll resolve this. Be right back." Comes back in a minute with the Holy Spirit. And the Holy Spirit says, "May I help you?" And he says, "Well, yes, I want to get in." "Who are you?" "Who am I?" "John the 23rd. The Pope. You know, Second Vatican Council?" And the Holy Spirit hit himself on the head and said, "Second Vatican Council? I was supposed to go to that." Now that's a joke. Well, I always start out with a little humor because when I used to head Americans United for Life, the anti-abortion group, and one time my mother was in the audience, and after my talk, I said, "Well, Mom, how'd it go?" She said, "You're the most depressing speaker I've ever heard." Put a little humor into it. Well, for years I spent every waking moment of my life working for the Right to Life movement. I was a volunteer in high school. I headed Americans United for Life. We're litigating cases. And it was everything about my life. I was single at the time. And then I left that work, and I got involved in anti-pornography work. And, you know, this past spring I was back to Chicago where I used to work. That was the headquarters of AUL. And I ran into a friend who knew me in those anti-abortion days. And he said to me, "Why did you ever leave the fight?" And I thought about that for a second, and I said, "I didn't leave the fight. I just went back to the beginning." Because, you see, if you don't understand that pornography is part of that same fight, if you don't understand that pornography and abortion are part of the same fight with the battle against same-sex marriage, you're not understanding what we're up against. What we're up against is the sexual revolution. And if your diocese or your church is fighting only abortion and only same-sex marriage, but you're not fighting pornography, you're only fighting part of the battle, and you cannot win. I use the term sexual revolution. That's their term. What it really is a spiritual insurrection. That's a more proper name. It's an insurrection against God's plan for human dignity and for human sexuality. And the nation that does not understand this theology of the body is a nation that's on a sure path to cultural destruction. And I believe that we are that nation. How many souls are lost due to the sins of the flesh? Didn't Mary say that most souls that go to hell go there because of sins of the flesh? Pornography is a gateway to these sins. Our catechism says about pornography that it is a grave offense. The sins of pornography, though, are overwhelming Catholic men. Every priest will tell you that. It's overwhelming many women as well. And what we know about pornography, what the priests know, is that pornography is spiritually disabling. You cannot have a spiritual life and be involved in pornography. In Life of Christ, Archbishop Fulton J. Sheen wrote that the penalty of those who live too close to the flesh is to never understand the spiritual. The two can't be reconciled. Let's look how indispensable pornography has been to this so-called sexual revolution. Hugh Hefner and Larry Flint and Hollywood and others have sold America on the notion that pornography is an emblem of our freedom. But what we know, especially in the internet age, is that it is an agent of destruction. You know, last year, about this time, a young mother called our office. She had a 6-year-old daughter who, she said, looks for pornography and sexual images every chance she gets. She had been shown pornography. What kind of a society have we built when children age 6 are obsessed with pornography? And let me ask you a question. Would you want your 6-year-old child or your 6-year-old granddaughter to be a playmate to that child? Children act out what they see, don't they? Every parent knows that. And children are acting out what they're seeing in pornography. There's a recent report out of the UK that says that 4,500 children have become sexual predators, some as age 5, sexual offenders, directly tied to their consumption of pornography. Now, that's a nation of 62 million. We're a nation of 300 million. Don't think that we don't have the same problem here. Child-on-child sexual abuse is a growing problem. And those of you who are older know very well, you never heard that crime until the internet age. The average age of first exposure to pornography is said to be age 11 now in America. And where do kids get their first exposure to pornography? Where do you think it is? It's in their own home, according to the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. And let's look at the nature of pornography. What would that 6-year-old have seen? What would any child see on the internet? What would you or I see if we were to spend 2 hours on internet pornography? What you'd see is an endless harem of sexual perversity. Before the internet age, unimaginable to most individuals. And so much of that pornography depicts violence against women. It's men dominating women. You know, the pornographers, when they're asked, why is violence such a big part of pornography? And you know what they say? And I've had these discussions. They say that they're just reflecting what the consumer wants. And you know, I believe them. Because it's the nature of pornography that when you look at it, you have to move to harder and more deviant material to maintain that excitement. And so people move from softcore to hardcore to harder core, more deviant material, and on and on and on. The brain demands that you keep moving. And there's something else about that violence that's so common in pornography, and that is this. That violence is real. It's unlike any other media violence. You know, even your kids know if they go to a movie and a detective shoots someone or a cowboy shoots someone, they know very well that it is not real. That person doesn't die. But everybody who consumes pornography and watches that violence understands that it is real. What is the effect on the brain when you take enjoyment from sex mixed with violence? I don't think we know the consequences of that. In pornography, the slapping, the fist beating, the gagging, the sexual attacks by multiple men on the women are all real. And what happens is that the audience is acting out what they see. I could tell you stories about many of the prostituted women that I've worked with over the years in my days working on sexual trafficking, who tell about the men who come to them wanting acts of violence that they can't get from their own wife. They've been watching pornography. People act out what they see. There was a terrible story out of Colorado a few months back, and you remember this story. There was a 12-year-old girl on her way to school. She used to meet every day with her friends in the city park, and the three of them would go to school. One day she didn't show up, and they looked for her. And they found that girl not just dead, but dismembered. And she had been sexually molested. And I said when they arrested that suspect, who was a 15-year-old boy, I said, that boy is addicted to pornography. And it turns out the next day the news stories had that the mother of that boy turned him in. She knew he was capable of that crime because for years he had been addicted to pornography. That boy was acting out what he saw in pornography. Boys don't commit that kind of a crime unless they're induced to do so by what they've seen in pornography or some other traumatic event. And let's not mistake this. Pornography consumption to a child is a traumatic event. Pornography is sexual abuse to the consumer of pornography if they are a child. That's no different than sexual abuse. And I was recently with a prominent software company executive, one of the pornography blocking software companies, and I asked that man, what percentage of families do you think in America have effective pornography blocking software in their home? What percent? He said, I think it's about 5%. And that's what I think. Think about that. 5% of the homes block pornography? Are parents that dumb? Are we that dumb? We have to be concerned about the generation of kids growing up today with a daily diet of pornography. We have no roadmap to their future. We do not know where they're going. We don't understand what will happen to this porn-ravaged generation that is in our midst today. There was a terrible incident a few years ago out of Richmond, California. You may have heard of this one, too. The girl who was in charge of the high school homecoming dance, a high school girl, left the dance, and on school property, she was surrounded by a group of her classmates, kids from school. And one by one, they raped that girl, and the ones who weren't raping her at the time videotaped it on their cell phones. Now, why were so many of those young boys willing to rape? And I submit it is because they've been there before. Not actually, but virtually. They've consumed so much sexual violence in pornography that it was a small step to go that one bit further. I heard Dr. Sharon Cooper, who's a pediatric professor at the University of North Carolina, describe this case. And what she pointed out is that kids, children, see pornography differently than an adult does. An adult may wish that they were having that sexual experience with that person in the film, but a child actually believes they're experiencing what they saw. The brain tricks them there, and it has a profound impact on the brain. She says what the impact is this: pornography consumption normalizes sexual harm. Pornography normalizes sexual harm. She warns that the prefrontal cortex of the brain becomes damaged by that consumption of pornography. It's not fully developed, won't be developed until much later, and it's very important that it develop correctly. She says that that's the home of good judgment, common sense, impulse control, and emotion. And there's no substitute for proper development. But porn throws that development off, and the consequences are very profound. And let me ask you this. Why would those kids stand around and videotape this? I think it's because we are developing a voyeuristic generation of kids. You've heard similar stories to the same one I just told out of Steubenville, Ohio. The football players taped that girl who passed out at a party. Another one, San Jose, that was just resolved recently. The police and family couldn't figure out why a 15-year-old girl committed suicide. And it came out that she was at a party, got drunk, passed out. Kids took the pictures. sexually molesting her, passed it around, and she couldn't face the consequences and committed suicide. That taping of those images is called sexting, and I'm sure you've all heard about this. Sexting is when the kids are videotaping themselves or taking pictures of themselves and passing it around. Now, let's look at what that is. Children producing this kind of material are producing child pornography. If I told you 20 years ago at the advent of the internet age that if we don't do something about internet pornography, someday children would become producers and distributors of child pornography, you wouldn't believe it. But that's what we have today. Why do kids get involved in sexting? There's a survey of girls, and here's what they said. Here's how they answered. 80% of the girls who are involved in sexting said they do so to get attention. Two-thirds said they do so taking pictures of themselves and passing them around. Two-thirds said they do so to be cool. 59% said they wanted to be like the popular girls. And 54% said they do so to find a boyfriend. The harms of pornography, in other words, have now reached a crisis level. And every family in America must be concerned. Pornography today is more popular than baseball. It's become our national pastime to some. Pornography has so many terrible consequences. I only want to run through a few of them because we've got two panels right after me, great speakers who will, in more detail, talk about some of these harms. But one of the most serious harms, I think, is addiction. And I'm not going to get Dr. Peter Klopanis will probably talk about how addiction takes place. But we have to understand that addiction is real, and it's not just addiction for adults. It's addiction for kids as well. I was with Josh McDowell, who's an evangelical youth minister. He's got a big organization. And he told me last year that from his dealing with youth pastors, he believes that half of the youth pastors in America are addicted to pornography. Half. That's his estimation, dealing with them on a daily basis. The thing that you need to know about pornography is that it never satisfies. And the others might explain what happens to the brain, but that's very important to understand. This explains why a man can look at pornography for hours at a time. It's not a satisfying experience. They come home from work, they've been looking at pornography at work, they put the kids to bed, and, oh, honey, I've got work in the office. So they go to the home office and they're looking at pornography, and they can do it for hours. It's devastating to a family. Women tell us that it's no different than if they were having an affair. And in fact, what happens is that many men prefer, after they become regular consumers of pornography, they prefer pornography and masturbation to relations with their spouse. Porn consumption, therefore, is leading to a breakdown of marriages. And I think it's on a massive scale. So if in your diocese, if you're in your church, you're working on the issue of marriage, but you're not attuned to what is happening to men and women on pornography, you can't solve their problems. Pornography leads to extramarital affairs as well. Alienation in the marriage becomes the dominant characteristic when one spouse is involved with pornography. Porn consumption is also leading to sexual dysfunction. Psychology Today had an article 2 years ago that talked about something called porn-induced sexual dysfunction, which they identified as a problem beginning with men in their 20s. What is it? It's the Viagra problem for guys in their 20s, because for 10 years they've been looking at pornography, lots of pornography daily, masturbating to it, and that's their sexual experience. They cannot have the same sexual experience with a real woman. So at the age when they should be thinking about marrying, they're thinking about pornography. We also know that pornography leads many into prostitution. I don't think there's a survey on this, but what percentage of men who go to prostitutes do you think are involved with pornography? Well, I think it's 100%. And we know that prostitution in America is very heavily influenced by sexual trafficking. Many of the women who are involved in prostitution are there against their will, particularly those underage. Pornography is leading to more sexual trafficking. Morality and Media, my organization, put out a journal article in the Johns Hopkins Journal titled The Slave and the Porn Star, which is available on our website, showing convincingly how pornography leads to the demand for sexually trafficked women.